The following episode has a video component, which can be found on the webpage for Turn the Page Podcast in the show notes.
Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
I'm Jessica. I'm Community Engagement Specialist at Syosset Public Library. This is a hybrid event. It is both a pop-up Q&A plus Turn the Page Live. Turn the Page is Syosset Public Library's podcast, which has grown in leaps and bounds, especially since we've been stuck inside since last year. And it's a lot of fun. So this is Jessica, and this is Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast, but it's also a live event. So those of you who are catching this after the fact, you can go to the show notes and we'll have a link to the video part of this presentation. And those of you who are here, welcome. I'm going to go over a few housekeeping before we get started. Excuse me. This is a fun, friendly event. Any semblance of hate speech, racism, abusive language will have you booted from the program, which is certainly not why we're here. I am so excited to talk about this graphic novel with our guests. There is a chat and a Q&A function on Zoom webinars. If you have any questions or comments, obviously, of the friendly, encouraging please put them in the chat or the Q&A, and I will address them to Matt and Steph, who I am now going to invite to introduce themselves. So yes, please introduce yourselves.
Sure. Steph, do you want to go first?
All right. Hi, I'm Steph. I am the artist on the graphic novel Martian Ghost Centaur. Just came out through Oni Press. And Matt is the writer.
Say hi, Matt. Yeah, I'm Matt. I wrote Martian Ghost Centaur. I also wrote a book called Unplugged and Unpopular, and some other stuff that's coming.
Awesome. Very cool. I am super in love with this book. I enjoyed it so much. And I very briefly, before you had gotten on that, and once again, anybody in the audience, if you have any questions or comments, please let me know. But I'm just going to jump right in and ask, so approximately how many cats is Felix, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many cats does Felix have? Do you have an approximate amount in your mind?
Me, I lots. All it said on the, I think all it said on, in the script was like an abundance of cats. It didn't say how many, but
yeah, it was just, yeah. There's never like really repeating cats for the most time. When I drew them, it was just like, just any type of cat, and they're all over like the store.
Let's say 2 dozen.
Yeah. I feel like generous, he would like kind of just be like a makeshift shelter where like he would just take in any cats that kind of like wandered in.
That's the dream, isn't it?
Yes.
You want all the cats. So, okay, so now that we got that out of the way, because that was my burning question, please tell the audience about the book and where the ideas came from.
Sure. So Martian Ghost Centaur is about this girl, Louie, who lives in a town in Northern California that's getting infiltrated by this tech company, and they're kind of taking over the town. And it's a really special place, mainly because of a Sasquatch that was spotted there years ago, but a really great community built up around it. But the story's about Louie, one, trying to protect that town, and two, getting her first job and kind of learning that there's no such thing as a job that's below you, and a job doesn't define you. That's kind of the through of the story, but then beyond that, it's got fun cryptids and jokes and really, really good drawings. not by me.
How did the two of you come together? And was it difficult to, did you work together a lot? Was there a lot of input from you, Matt, to Steph, or Steph did, were the characters, did they just sort of, were they just sort of fully formed in your mind when you started?
He was actually pretty, like, they came, so the editor and Matt approached me because they saw my webcomic at the time. And they sent me like the pitch or like the script. And I, when I read it, I was like immediately in love with it. It's a humor very, very similar to my own. And when I signed on to the book and like actually got started working on the art portion, because Matt basically for a few months like wrote and they edited the script till they got it to where they wanted it. And then they gave it to me. And then as far as like character design, I had a lot of freedom as far. It was kind of like, this is their name, this is their age range, maybe like a character trait or two. But outside of that, like I would just do some basic sketches. I'd show them and be like, oh, like, is this what you want? You know? And then it was actually a very, it almost felt like a little, like, it was like almost too easy. Like everyone, we saw like, you know, after a few designs with Louie and Felix, I think I had like the first pass of Felix was the one that got in the book. Cause they're all like, great, perfect, done. So Paranorma, I think, had like the most changes done to her. But it was very collaborative the whole time, even when, because like at the start of the book, it was more like Matt writing, and then he kind of passed the baton to me for the art part. And even during that, though, like I'd always check in with them and, you know, make sure that the, you know, the way the scene was framed or the way they were acting kind of matched up with, you know, everyone's idea for the book.
We have a note in the chat. Matt, you're supposed to have a sophomore slump, right? You're making the rest of us look bad. What preceded Martian Ghost Centaur?
A book called Unplugged and Unpopular. It's a middle grade book I did with Tintin Bentoa and Mike Amonte. And it's about this girl, Erin, who gets her cell phone taken away and then finds out an alien invasion's happening and everyone except for her grandma and her grandma's friends are controlled by the aliens. But oh man, I've had slumps. I made a lot of books before this.
Slumps for years. Matt just makes it look easy.
Steph, what was your webcomic? Tell us about your webcomic.
I did a webcomic called Jet Black for a while. I basically put it on hold to make Martian Ghost Centaur, and now I'm working on a book series for Harper Alley right now. But I kind of consider Jet Black to be my, like, kind of like, I kind of treated it like the best business card I could ever make, where I wanted to prove to myself and to like readers that I could, you know, make a formal comic, both write and draw it myself. And I think before that, whenever I had tried comics, I never like wrote a script and learned how to properly format things or like how to structure a story or anything. So for me, it was a really good exercise in learning how to tell a story through comics. Because, you know, I always loved writing and I always loved drawing, but it's like, it feels like it should be a little bit more natural to combine the two. But like, there's kind of this whole magic science in the in-between of figuring out how best to tell a story, when to get wordy, when to not. And Jet Black was basically that for me. And it worked because it got my work out there, got my work seen. And eventually I would like to return to it because I really loved the story and the characters, and they seem to have pretty good reception. So
maybe that's very interesting, because I have noticed, especially the more artists I talk to and interact, it seems like webcomics almost are like a resume mm-hmm. for an artist. And more webcomic artists are being connected to these publishing companies. And Matt, do you draw, or you?
I draw a ton, but yeah. Nowhere close to the abilities of Steph. I'd say I never learned perspective or how to consistently draw something, but I love drawing. I draw all the time. That would be like a dream one day if I actually had like ample time to like actually sit down and try and draw some. But I think I got two kids and in a full life right now, so I don't know when that'll happen. But
yeah, I know. Yeah, that's like, who has time for that? Yeah. nobody at all. So I was mentioning again to Steph before you came on in the interview, I got a lot of Gravity Falls feels from Martian Ghost Centaur. I take it you're both fans?
We are. And there's so many things that about Steph that, like, when we started working together, that the story was just so meant for, like, I didn't know that stuff like Gravity Falls or like or so many simpatico things. But yeah, I just discovered the show right as I was writing it, so, and it definitely fell in there a bunch.
Yeah, when I read the script, just like kind of like the Pacific Northwest kind of like, yeah, cryptid vibes, like, really, I mean, it's hard to like see anything in that genre and not think Gravity Falls. It's become like an instant classic of sorts, or at least like I always just like it both from like an art and writer's perspective, because I always appreciate a story that it knew when to end, it knew how to tell a complete story. It's really funny, it's for kids, but like it has like the great, you know, meeting place where like adults can enjoy it, and it doesn't dumb things down, it doesn't talk down to the viewers at all. It's just really great, and so it was kind of fun to get to like kind of tap into that like energy a bit. Like, it's not quite as like Martian Ghost Centaur is definitely its own thing for
sure. Absolutely. I didn't mean to imply. You pick up on influences, and I'm pretty sure I saw the shooting star, Mabel's shooting star, on a pillow someplace.
And Louis, but wow, that's a good catch.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
That was a really good catch. Yeah.
I zoomed right in on that. I was like, ooh, shooting star. Pleasure to meet you here. We have a question. Steph, are Jeremy Whitley and Brian O'Malley among your influences?
Brian Lee O'Malley, I have a Ramona Flowers tattoo. It's kind of hard to say from the single. But yeah, Scott Pilgrim and Brian Lee O'Malley's work was like kind of the reason I got into wanting to make graphic novels. I mean, I was always a really big manga enthusiast. That's always what I grew up reading. And I had a hard time kind of connecting to a lot of the Western comics at the time. Cause I mean, I love superhero stuff now, and like, I'm a huge X-Men fan, but at the time I was, you know, reading primarily manga. And when Scott Pilgrim came out, and it was this blend of like Western storytelling and like kind of like manga influence, and I was like, wait, you can do that? I was like, you don't have to like stay in one lane. That's awesome. So he's, yeah, a huge influence.
Yeah, that's been, I think, something I've really been enjoying as somebody who kind of grew up with one and really never got why there seems to be a fence between the two of them. I feel like there's a lot of artists and writers who grew up with both and are now comfortable blending them, which is super great. So Matt, from a storytelling perspective, why did you decide to focus on this particular part of Lou's life? This is, I mean, I think it's like, it's a very pivotal age for a lot of kids. I remember when I was that age, and it seemed like all of my friends were moving in different directions. And like in my mind, I could tell I related to her for that reason. But was there something that drew you to her age and her perspective that made you decide that?
Sure. Well, like in general, pretty much anytime I have a story idea, it always ends up really young. Like it ends up usually younger than this. Like when I initially was starting to talk to Lionforge, who was the original publisher who had bought this, and then they became Oni. It was a middle grade story. That was the initial story. But then as the idea of the job became like way more central to the story, character had to be of age to be able to work. And then it became even like the story just became so clear when it's like about losing something. It's about like your town is changing, things are changing. What time do things change more than when you're about to go to college or you're about to like end that chapter and enter into adulthood? So it was perfectly placed there, but it, yeah, it just seemed like that had to be where it was. Yeah.
I like it, and I'm glad. I feel like it probably would work for an older middle grade, but it's I don't actually think there's really an age that needs that Martian Ghost Centaur could be enjoyed by. I think it'll be easily enjoyed by adults and teens and some tweens. So I mean, I think it was just beautifully done. It's just always a bit of a gut punch when I'm reading about somebody at that age, at that point, because it is such a crossroads in your life that it's difficult to shake that feeling. It's like you're always back in August of the last year of your childhood when you read about that. Question from the audience. Matt, when you were looking for an artist, were you looking for a similar art style to Tintin's? Or was this just a happy coincidence to find somebody from the same pool of influences with the same level of talent?
No, looking for the right fit for the story. Yeah, I feel like there's so many, like so phenomenal differences between Steph and Tintin. I see that there's definitely that, like I'm sure you guys have some of the same influences. Mm-hmm. But when I'm looking for an artist, to Steph's account of like talking about the webcomic earlier, I look at webcomics and I see, do the people actually like update? Is it like one web they posted once and then posted like a year later? And I'm like, oh, probably that they're not going to be the person who will be able to like do this thing that's kind of bigger. I just look, I look at their past work. I look at sequentials always. Like there's so many amazing artists that are out there that I see, like they do these, they have great pinups and tons of great pinups. But if someone can't show like a girl throwing a ball and breaking a window, it's not going to work. I mean, but Steph blew me away. I read all of Jet Black like right away. And then, I'm so happy that she said yes.
Yeah, and I think kind of going off what we were talking about earlier with webcomics and kind of breaking into like mainstream publishing or like graphic novel publishing is webcomics, you know, I always have a lot of like younger artists or, you know, people going into college or high school being like, you know, I also want to get into publishing, but like, you know, like, what do I do? How do I do it? And my biggest recommendation is to do like a webcomic or to like do a physical comic, but like complete a story or at least complete an issue, like at least have a few pages. So that kind of like what Matt was saying is like, you want to see, you know, sequentials, you want to see that you can kind of carry a project through because comics are a lot of work. Like it seems like an obvious thing to say, but I feel like until you actually like sit down to make one, you don't realize how many moving parts there are with like the script, the editing, penciling, thumbnail, you know, it's a huge undertaking. And while like, I mean, illustration, like I do illustration as well, but like it's a much different process to create like one pinup or one image as opposed to creating, you know, a whole universe. And there's things you have to consider, like kind of like filmmaking, where like you have to have continuity, you have to make sure you're using the same color palettes and making sure the backgrounds. I made like an actual blueprint of Louis's house so that when she would like walk in the space, like the rooms were always in the same area. And it's something the viewers would probably not notice, but like it's things that go into comic making. And I feel like a great place to show that off is with web comics, especially. And it's like a great place to kind of get your groundings and, you know, see if it's really something for you.
I mean, myself as a consumer of these things, I am always blown away when somebody completes a story arc, because I would never know where to land. It always seems like endings are always very difficult to stick. And even some webcomics that have been going on for a really, really long time, just scripting out these arcs, it blows my mind. Matt, when you're writing, do you generally, like, did you see this as a series? Do you think this could still be a series, or did you see it as a complete project?
I see it as a complete project, but that said, I would love to do one more book. Like, I don't see it as a like 20 book series. I would love to explore like kind of a next step with Louis, like just college and kind of going on to, or not college for her because she makes that decision, but like college aged. But no, a lot of the books that I try and do, and I think that this is a lot of people writing comics, I try and do self-contained stories that could be more, because it's much easier to sell a self-contained story than to sell like, oh, I want to do my 10 book series. So I a lot of them are like, this is a complete story. Oh man, I hope to do more. There's ones that have more legroom than others, like ones that like I know are more serious. But every no matter what though, every book that I will ever do will have a beginning, middle, and end. And I just feel like that's just got to be it. I think that the old mindset of these like really long spanning stories, I don't think they work in the same way for what people want for comics now. So yeah. 200 pages and you'll get a real ending.
our question from the audience: how did the character Martian Ghost Centaur came to be, and how many revisions were made before landing on the final design? It seems like a really complex character that was known perfectly.
It was actually maybe the easiest character, which it feels like, I swear, like, so for the first step in, I did some like sketches of all like the people characters. And I think I did like one of the Martian Ghost Centaur at the time when I sent it to Matt and our editor, Grace. And it's funny because I was literally just like, okay, like, let's just get the obvious thing out of the way. Okay, we got a centaur body. We got the horse body. We got the Martian helmet. Cause that was like the first thing I thought of when I thought of Martian. And then I was like, you know, I was like ghost. I was like, okay, like a ghost of Christmas past. He's going to have like chains and like tattered stuff. And I think literally the big difference from his first design was he had like little Martian antenna, like the little
ball
things. And then I gave him like kind of like a ram horn, like to be a little like creepier. And I made his, and when I went to actually like ink him and draw him for that final book is when I was like, okay, I want to like spice him up a bit. And I was like, for the centaur part, it'd be really fun. Like, I really like Clydesdale horses, because they have those like really big tufts of like hair or fur near the bottom of their hooves, and it gives it a little bit more personality. And I was like, a centaur could also be a Clydesdale, I guess. And I was like, it's kind of fun because with like Louis and Pratima making it, I was like, okay, it could be like purple and red and like, but like for the most part, Martian Ghost Centaur would just, I think because it's complex, but it's also so simple. Like there's literally like, I don't think Matt even gave me an actual description.
No, I mean the title of the book. Yeah, just
yeah. I was literally just like, "Hey, whatever you want to do here, whatever comes to your mind." The Martian Ghost Centaur, and I show them. They're just like, "Cool,
nice." I read Martian and felt like the story would have also worked as a continuation from Aaron's story in Unplugged.
Yeah, I mean that would have been really fun. Like I like that character a lot. I definitely. Like the idea of, I like the idea of more Unplugged and Unpopular too. That would be fun.
Are there any artists or graphic novels that you're reading now that you really are enjoying?
I'm reading a bunch of stuff. I'm actually just like kind of now getting back into reading manga. I used to read it all the time in high school. Like that's all I spent my money on, that's all I did. And then I feel like in college, like once I started making comics, I kind of dropped off of reading them. And I think that's kind of common for a lot of creators, especially in like the full-time kind of spectrum. But I've started reading just a lot of really cute fluffy manga, but I also really love reading a lot of young adult middle grade. Like there's so many fun middle grade graphic novels coming out right now, especially like in like kind of the Western audience. I'm a really big fan of like the Making Friends series by Kristen Goodsnuck. I've been reading all like the Babysitter Club adaptations have been super, super fun. And it's really fun. I don't know. It's just stuff that like, I feel like even though I'm a 29-year-old woman, going back and reading these stories about like, I'm a 13-year-old, my braces. But like, I feel it's stuff I would have loved to read when I was that age. And like I said, back in, you know, when I was younger, like manga was pretty popular, but like there wasn't a lot of Western stuff catered towards my age range or towards like the teen market that wasn't either just straight up superheroes or straight up manga stuff. So I've just been kind of catching up, reading whatever series comes out in like the middle grade, young adult area.
Yeah, your generation, and I say that being like a little more than 10 years older than you, was lucky that you had things like Inuyasha available to you. There really, and I mentioned this again before, there was really not a lot accessible to me when I was a young teen, but I knew that I loved manga, and finding it was very difficult, but it is true that a lot of like Rumiko Takahashi and even Yu Watase, a lot of those stories about, you know, young girls sort of finding power and magical worlds, and they had, you know, agency and were outspoken. That was not really too easy to find in the Western comic. And that's not to say, I mean, I enjoyed X-Men. I liked all of it. But I knew, like, for instance, when I first saw Sailor Moon, like, she was this flawed character. And there was something about just her and her ragtag group of friends and the fact that she liked to stuff her face that I was like, man, there's none of that in the comic books I'm reading. Where do I find it? So again, like I said, I think it's really great to see these middle grade Western comics that are, you know, doing that now. What about you, Matt? What are you reading?
I'm reading a lot of younger.
By the way, this is Dipper.
Oh, that is Dipper. Hello, Dipper. Nice to meet you. We've met so many cats on these podcasts.
Yeah.
I'm reading younger stuff right now. Like a lot. Like I'm reading a lot of Dog Man, a lot of Phoebe and her unicorn.
Those are wonderful. And Dana Simpson is amazing.
So my daughter said by far that she doesn't like my comics because I don't have unicorns.
No. They're unicorn, you know. Oh, no. And
she likes
far is close.
Yeah, she loves Dana Simpson's work. So yeah, just been reading a lot of that, and then so many cartoons. I've just been like really watching cartoons that kind of changing it up.
Question from the audience. Matt, how much of what you write is sort of stacking the shelves for your daughter to read when she's older? Wow, that kind of fits with what you were just saying.
Like everything, like for my daughter and son, like it's like it doesn't start off that way. That's not like it starts off, I'm inspired and I want to tell a story, but like as I'm writing it, they're who I have in mind. So, you know, teaching them like almost every book has a like, hey, like open-hearted, everyone is great, like all accepting inclusivity, and everything is kind of about, you know, like lessons that I hope to teach her, you know, without hopefully it being too corny and on the nose, you know.
Does being a parent then really, does it influence, you think, your writing style? Did you write differently before that?
You know, I always wrote younger. Like I always, like my first book was not younger, but it was it wasn't intended to be like a young adult book. It was this book on Action Lab called Just Another Sheep. And that one was like there was adult things in it, but overall it you could have stripped a couple things out and it would have been a story for kids. But as far as becoming a parent impact like absolutely every part of my life? Like my daughter's been like on my chest, like she was on my chest when I was writing the first book. like taking her naps in the little baby Bjorn. And I'm like, I'm the one who stays at home with her and my my now 8-month-old son. So like they are like my entire life, so much so that I don't know how to do social media because I don't know about sharing them on social media. But like I can't share anything on social media because all I'm doing is like parks and kid stuff, and I love it. I don't know. Sorry.
How much coffee do you need to drink to be into work and be a parent at the same time?
So much. Yeah, there's lots of like very late nights, but yeah they're the cutest. They're very, very cute, very happy kids. I really lucked out on that part too.
Yeah, I drew them there also. They show up in the book.
Yes, they do. Yeah. And somebody, I think to the point that you were talking about your daughter complaining that your books have no unicorns in it, says, yeah. Ouch.
Yeah. But there was this one panel when I was coloring one of the pages, and I would like update them, and there's this panel of Louie and her eyes are sparkly and full of hearts and stars. And I remember Matt told me that his daughter was like, oh my God, that's the prettiest girl I've ever seen.
She was like floating around with it. She really, really liked it.
So yeah. Cute. I was like, that's the best review I've ever gotten in my life.
Yeah, because kids are super honest. I'll tell you, as like a former, you know, but like I still do story times when we're actually in person, I'll do offsite story times, but also from having done story times for about 15 years, kids are super honest. They will tell you exactly what's on their mind. So like public speaking in front of adults, I'm like, at least for the most part, they have restraints, but kids, they'll be like, hey, let me tell you exactly what I'm thinking right now.
especially middle schoolers. It's the best. Like, things aren't formed for middle school boys specifically. Maybe I'm just I feel like there's no filter at that age. Yeah.
Has the pandemic affected your art and writing styles, or just a process rather?
It's definitely been an adjustment, because I was wrapping up, I was in the last few months of like inking and coloring the book by the time the pandemic had hit, because I had wrapped it up in, I want to say, August. And I mean, it was weird, because it was in a way a weird push where it's like, okay, like you have to go full time. It was kind of like I feel the pandemic was kind of a push for everybody in a different way. And for me, it was very much like, because I had worked part-time at a job, then part-time doing the book. But even then I was finding it really, really hard. Cause like I said, comics are so, and even just being the artist was a ton of work. And I would just never take breaks ever. Super late nights, just on countless cans of Monster Energy, which I do not recommend. And I feel like the pandemic in a way, like in a tough way, like it's not an ideal situation for everyone, but, or for anyone, but it kind of pushed me to be like, okay, like this is the time to figure out how you work full time as an artist. This is the time where, when I was wrapping up Martian Ghost Centaur, I was also like, okay, I need to like think, I want to make some other books. I want to write books too. And I wanted to pitch my own series. So I was working on a pitch and looking for an agent, kind of doing all the legwork while wrapping everything else up. And for me, it worked very well in the way that it finally kind of gave me time. I'm very fortunate, a lot of privilege where I got to stay with my parents for a bit just to, you know, kind of make things a little bit easier. And, you know, now it's just kind of like, you know, going into this next year, working on my series for Harper Alley and going back to living on my own. And it's, I felt like for me, at least, it was a very big like fight or flight moment. It was like, okay, you're either going to sink or swim, like you got to make it work, or because, you know, you got to go back to something else. So it was a tough experience, but so far so good.
What about you, Matt?
For me, it was kind of the opposite. I lost like any free time, because it was like my daughter would be at school, and then I would get that time to usually write, and then I'd write at night too. But that ended, you know, and then I would be doing school with my daughter next door. And then we had a baby during the middle. So that kind of took some of the free time too. And he's awesome. He's the best wife there. And then my wife was also working at home. And we were at the time in a tiny apartment in the Bay Area. So it was a lot of like juggling during the day and then writing late at night. But, you know, I can't not. It's like one of those, like, I really can't not. I've tried, but like, I have to be doing something like that. So I was finding the time, even pretty late hours, but I'm happy with what I got done. There's specifically one book that I'm really proud of that was written very, very late nights, that hopefully sees the world soon. So
did you guys have a presentation that you wanted to do, by the way?
We do, yeah, if time allows it.
Let's do that. Let's do that. Actually, let's do it in about a few minutes. I have one last question if there aren't any other audience questions. And again, those who are listening to the audio, if you would like to see the video where the presentation will be, you can check out the show notes and we will have a link to it. But my last question before we go to that, the presentation, is, do you believe in cryptids?
Yeah.
No judgment one way or the other.
Certain ones. I'm always kind of like, I'm very much a Libra, so like I very much stay in the middle of things. I don't really go to like a diehard like yes or no, but like I'm like, I definitely think, you know, ghosts and all that stuff, or I'm like, there's a possibility, because I feel it's always the person who doubts like a cryptid or a ghost or whatever's existence in a horror movie that they're always the first one to die, and I don't want that to be me.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the rule, right?
But I mean, when I was little and I would go visit my grandma in Arizona, and they had like, my favorite cryptid is probably one of the dumbest ones, but it's the jackalope. It's literally a rabbit with deer horns. And there was nothing you could tell me when I was little. I was like, yeah, that's real. Like they had it like little plushies of it in the gift shop, and they would have like Photoshop pictures of it or whatever. And I was like, oh, grandma, I want to go see one. Like, take me to the desert. I want to go see it. And, but you know, I think it's fun believing in cryptids, and I'd like to be proved right as long as they're nice.
Of course. What about yourself, Matt?
Also, I'd like it to be true. I think I'm too much of a realist sometimes. I'm like, nah, that couldn't. I poke too many holes in it. But I think the one that I think seems most likely is Bigfoot. I feel like that's the one that I feel like, yeah. And then ghosts, like supernatural, yeah, oh yeah, I believe. Aliens, oh yeah, I big time believe, yeah, there's aliens.
Yeah.
I think it'd be silly to think that it's just us.
Yeah, I agree. Probably also, I think the Loch Ness Monster is real. I don't know why, but I think it's because it's really close to just like being an animal. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, something like that probably exists.
I mean, it's very, okay, so the Loch Ness Monster, really the way that it's been depicted, was a prehistoric animal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, at one point that existed,
yeah,
scientifically, whether or not they still exist in the depths of something. But at one point, those did exist. As you know, you go to the Museum of Natural History and they have skeletons of these. And one thing I think is interesting also, you know, there are quote unquote cryptids that have been proven to exist, such as a platypus.
Yeah, that's considered a cryptid? Wow.
Well, at one point, I mean, somebody thought when the first platypus was brought in, they thought that the guy actually just sewed all of these animals together. Because who would believe that this thing really exists?
Poor platypus.
Poor platypus. Ah, Penny the platypus. It's not a secret agent, but you know, but like for real, like look at it, like.
Yeah, that is true. Like, duck, beaver, what?
Yeah, exactly. A duck with a beaver's tail, and it's a kind of a mammal that lays eggs, and it's poisonous. by the way.
You look at pictures of it.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I mean, I feel like I need to do a lot of platypus research after this.
Me too.
Very curious. Oh, there's so much about I feel like that whole region, is kind of like where evolution was just like took like a dartboard and is like, you know what? Like we're kind of like it's just gonna do what.
Yeah, this thing needs to survive somehow. Yeah. Put a duck bill on it. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, we're just gonna kind of make this thing happen. And anyway, and there's other things too. You know, I hadn't known was a cryptid for a while. People have talked about like phantom kangaroos or phantom marsupials existing, and from what I've heard, like a lot of times that deals with somebody who has a pet that they shouldn't actually have. And
yeah,
like, oh, there's
a Tiger King situation.
Oh, listen, Joe Exotic is a cryptid. I don't want to know that he exists, or like half the people in that show. Oh my God. Yeah. It's been a year, by the way, everybody. It's been a year since
years since the Tiger still King.
There.
It's still fresh in the mind. But yeah, you know, like people would be like, oh, this is upstate New York, and I totally saw a kangaroo, and really it's like someone had like a wallaby or something and they shouldn't have, and it's like their pet. So, you know, I think it's always very interesting because I consider myself an open-minded skeptic. I mean, you know, could a jackalope really exist? Well, should a platypus exist? I don't know. I mean, you know, like maybe someone did sew horns to a rabbit, but a platypus exists. So, and then somebody says, if I'm pronouncing this incorrectly, Parapanats by Todd DeZago and Craig Rousseau is much more fun if you do believe in cryptids.
Oh, that's a good book. Yeah.
All right. Presentation time. You should be able to share your screens.
Oh, cool. I'll get that right now. Sorry, one moment, guys. Share screen.
And by the way, now I think creepy clowns are listed as a cryptid.
Because that was a thing a few years ago. That was an interesting time in our history.
Oh, that was very strange. I remember people being like, yeah, there were creepy clowns outside of my high school. And I'm like, were there really, though? Are you just
been high schoolers outside of the high school district?
Yeah.
Yeah, like really? Yeah. I mean, you know, come on. All right, here we go.
Okay, so what this is basically just a breakdown of actually the first page of the book. So just kind of how Steph and I did things. So I'll kind of start off with me. So initially I pitched Lionforge, this story, and I hadn't written it all up. I just write a pitch document that's like 4 pages long, and I touch on some main points of like why I think people might like this book, and really the story in general, telling the whole entire story, not dialogue and everything, but like the beginning, middle, and end. They need to know everything about it. And then afterwards they're like, cool, we like it, let's make it. And who do you want to make it with? I'm like, Steph, please. And Steph said yes. So then I made a script. And I make a script always as much as possible with whoever is going to be drawing it in mind, because it's so different. Like I couldn't write the same script for Steph as I would for Sam, I'm working with on another book. Just different art styles, different, just kind of knowing what they do. But anyways, I will sometimes go too far. Hopefully I don't go too far in my script, but sometimes I give a lot of description. This I did not so much. I break down the panels and then I send it to Steph. And yeah.
So from the sketch or from the script phase, so I do the thumbnail phase first, which it's basically what you see on the screen now, except imagine them being like an inch tall or something. They're done really, really quickly just to see how each page flows, like the layout and the kind of the general composition. It's kind of like a very, very loose storyboard, essentially, just to see if how the script looks, if it makes sense for an actual comic page, because sometimes you realize like, oh, actually we should add an extra panel, or we should get rid of this, or like we should arrange it a different way. For the most part though, Matt's scripts were super, super clean and clear. So there wasn't a lot of like redos at this part. Because, you know, like you said, like different artists and writers respond to different things, but we found like a good system of where he would be pretty direct with what he wanted. And a lot of the details were kind of left to me, but we'd always check in with each other. The next phase is pencils, which is basically just the nicer version of the thumbnail. So this is at the actual size of each page. Actually a little bit larger, just for details and stuff and for printing. But this is where you go in, and this is kind of, I always really like this part, but sometimes a lot of people don't get as detailed as I do in pencils. And on my first major book, I definitely learned that I didn't have to be quite as detailed as this. Like, this is the first page in the book, and it's like pretty, like if you just change the purple lines to black, it would have basically been the inks. But by the end of it, it was super, super loose and super, but you know, you kind of get used to it. But this is the part where you get to, you know, decide what the characters look like and actually flesh things out. And then the next phase is my favorite phase, is inking. And it's just kind of, I like it because inking is a really hard skill to develop, but once you do, it's almost like kind of a very zen thing to do, because it's kind of like painting by numbers, where all you have to do is, you know, follow your line and just make sure the line width is fine. And this is also the part where, like, if I wanted to put any last minute like details, I put a lot of like different little sight gags, kind of like Mabel's pillow or Mabel's shooting star on the pillow. I would put that in during inking, so I could remember to color it later. And the next phase is colors, or flats, for some industry lingo. Flats are basically just, yet again, kind of paint by number, just everyone's base palette. I had actual little, I had a whole document open at all times with little like screenshots of each character as I would color them. So I would have a little like color sample I could sample from to make sure everyone had the same hair color throughout the book, so Louis wouldn't randomly be brunette by the end of the book or something. And so yet again, it's just kind of just filling in the color, making sure color fits the mood. And the next phase is kind of where my part of the journey kind of ends, is where I put in the shading, highlights, color in lines, just any last minute things to really give the effect we want for the book. And then once all of the art is colored and put together in the way that we like, we had an amazing letterer who helped us out, who did all of the lettering you see, because lettering, it seems like it wouldn't be really hard, or it wouldn't be a huge portion of comics, but it's a really, really specific skill that has so much, there's a ton of specific rules and things you have to keep in mind for like printing, and for the reader to be able to read everything legibly, and to make sure there's enough space within the panels, and making the fonts match the vibe of the book. And it's a whole art within itself. So we were really, really lucky to get to work with our letterer. And yeah, after that, once the letters are done, we basically just go through one final pass of revisions with like all the editors and stuff. We had like a few fixes, and then it was ready for printing, essentially.
You're muted, Jessica.
Of course I am. if we have a question, Steph, do you use the same program for every stage?
Actually, for the thumbnails and the pencils and the inks, I use Procreate. I used to draw primarily on a Cintiq, like the tablet that has the screen on it. but I switched to an iPad Pro with an iPad pencil and I started using Procreate. And then for the coloring, I use a program called Clip Studio Paint or Clip Studio Pro. And it's like made for comics and for, you can also do like just ink and pencil in it, but it has like really great coloring tools that help you flat things really easily, helps you keep track of certain colors. So it was my first time using both of those primarily for comic making, and I absolutely love both of them and can plan to keep using them. I used to work primarily with Photoshop, but Adobe kind of is not the greatest cost-wise for a lot of young creatives who don't have a ton of money to spend on their programs. As much as I feel like they should be more accessible, I feel like for people looking to getting into illustration and comic making who want a more affordable and also like actually much more geared towards comic making, Procreate and Clip Studio Paint especially are fantastic tools that are far more cost effective.
So one more question from myself. Why would you remind me that Skater Boy happened 18 years ago? Right? CSP is fantastic. I also use it, someone in the audience says.
I have a funny skate story about that. I used to work promotion in Boston at the time that came out, and I spray painted Skater Boy, Skater Boy, all over Boston as part of this like promo company.
Whoa, that was your job?
Yeah, it was a great gig. I got to do like a Boys to Men concert that was really, really interesting because it was later career Boys to Men.
I have to remember all of the boy bands. I'm thinking Boys for Now, but that's Bob's Burgers. They don't actually exist.
Boys to Men was like the R&B slow jams.
Right, because you know there was Backstreet Boys, and then there was NSYNC, and then
Boys to Men was the more adult version.
yes. Boys to Men. Because then there was like a parody band called Together.
Oh, I love Together.
Right? But
like, and Chris Farley's brother in it.
Exactly.
Yeah. What? So
funny.
Ask me anything useful, I won't know it. But I can tell you about the, 1999 MTV fake reality show Together. I could tell you about
it. I think we have that in common, Steph.
Matt is an amazing writer, but I think I also think his references make me feel old. There's not much you can do. Though I can't remember if it was McSweeney's or what like parody website it was, but recently I read somebody wrote an op-ed by the target of Skater Boy, the girl who rejected him, who's basically like, listen, Avril, just because I wasn't interested in your boyfriend at the time doesn't make me stuck up. But it was very funny. Well, this was so cool. Any other audience questions before we go? One more question from me. Would you want to see Martian Ghost Centaur animated?
Oh, that'd be really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, the animation. The cartoon nerd in both of us. I feel like, yes.
I love animation. Like that's another like passion and thing that I want to try and do. So anything.
And I feel like comics and animation go, because I wanted to go into animation before I got into comics, but I always kind of joke that I felt like comics was always secretly like the boy next door, whatever, for me, where I was like, I'm not interested in making comics, I want to be with animation. And then when I went to college and I actually did animation, I was like, I love it, but I don't like making it. And then I discovered that I really, really loved making comics, and I was like, it was you all along.
And then you run into comics on the line to Starbucks or whatever, coffee house you're at, and it's like, hey, how's you been?
Martian Ghost Centaur, we really hit it off. And
you've been okay, I've been okay, maybe we can get coffee together someday and make it.
And it would be super, super cool to see it. You know, especially Louie's so animated already. So.
Oh, she really is. Audience comment. I wanted to give Matt props for writing Lou's parents as two dads and not making a big deal about it. They just are. Kudos, Matt.
Agreed. I mean, that's the world.
Yeah, it's really funny when reading reviews about it, which is really great. It makes me really happy that people are like, cool, like I like seeing that. But at the same time, yeah, it was never like something we sat down and was like, we have to make everyone very inclusive. We have to, you know, it's just kind of like, oh, well,
yeah,
it's different like people that we know are like,
I mean, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, some people have two dads, and that's just the way the world is.
Yeah, it's nice to put it in and just not have it be, a thing, because it's not a thing with my friends. No. It's not a thing with like my day to day life. So, it seems strange if media does do that, which they do.
Sometimes.
But hopefully that ends sooner than later.
Sometimes people don't decide to go to college right away, or at all. I mean, you know, it's just. It just is, and it's just beautifully done. Martian Ghost Centaur is available out now. Yes.
Everywhere. Yes, it is.
Everywhere.
It's available. Yeah.
Yeah. Go to the bookstore, comic store. It's there. Should be.
And if it is, not Amazon. Don't do it on Amazon. You don't want to. Get it someplace else.
Yeah. Or your library, even. Libraries. Or bookshop.org if you don't want to go into a shop, because you can support local bookstores that way too.
Yes.
Yes. But this has been wonderful. Hopefully at some point we will all meet at a convention in person.
Hope so.
Though the idea of being packed into a crowded convention hall right now is a little weird.
Yeah, it's gonna take some easing back into that for sure. It's definitely not gonna be as simple as it was, but I look forward to the day when it can happen again.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think about the days at the Javits Center where we were all just sort of packed in and sweaty and breathing on each other, and I'm like, what were we thinking? Oh my! Yeah. You know, like when you said you'd get like the con crud, where you'd have like a sore throat or you'd get sick, probably. Like, it doesn't have to be. You know, it's gonna take a while, but we'll get there.
Let's do some open air ones. Do some like they do in Europe.
That would be lovely. Absolutely lovely.
That'd be so nice. That'd just be nice as a creator sitting at a table all day. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Well, once again, this was Jessica with Turn the Page Podcast Live, and our guests were
Matt Haggerty
and Stephanie Mited.
And thank you all for joining us. Check out Martian Ghost Centaur at your library, at your local bookstore. Tell your friends about it. And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.